I'm Sarah Marshall. I've worked with some of the world's leading brands to drive business growth. And now I'm sharing my knowledge and expertise with you. In my podcast, Lessons from the Boardroom, I talk to other successful leaders to find out how they've perfected their craft, driven success, and dealt with the challenges that leadership brings. So come on, dive in. Welcome to Lessons from the Boardroom, the podcast version. What a treat today. We've got my old mate, Richard Simpson. We just worked out off air that we've known each other about 14 years. Richard is co-founder and co-owner of Limitless Innovations Group, a brilliant marketing services group. I've worked with Richard for a long time. I really rate him. He has had a really interesting journey and we're here to hear about it. So welcome, Richard.
Oh, thank you so much. That means a lot coming from you, Sarah.
Oh, sure. No, I mean it. We've been through a lot over the years.
We sure have, yeah.
Yeah, you've got some, we've got some stories to tell. Anyway, enough of that. Could you introduce yourself, tell us about Limitless, how your journey has progressed, how you got to where you are now, a little bit about Limitless Innovations Group. We want to know who the real Richard is and what's going on.
Okay, who is the real Richard? So I guess, do you know, it's really interesting because this Saturday will be a 30-year reunion since a rugby team that I played with went on tour to Hong Kong and Singapore. And within all that, we were looking through tour programs and so forth, and I had a little biography. And so from the age of 17, I knew that I wanted to own and run my own advertising agency.
Wow.
And I hadn't actually appreciated that. I knew it's something I'd always been interested in, and it took me a wee while to get my break. I mean, I started off selling ad space in the Independent newspaper. But that sort of ability to sell really and build relationships, coupled with that interest in creative services, helped me get my first break, which was with Elmwood, a global brand design consultancy. And then I was fortunate to land a role at Tayburn in about 2008 as their BD guy, basically. And through a sort of combination of persistence and probably pestilence, wangled my way under the board. Yeah, basically.
Can I see this?
Yeah. Got an opportunity to, was gifted some share options, which were then converted into actual shares in the business. It coincided with a general sort of succession plan where a number of long established directors, because the business was 45 years old and we'll be celebrating its 46th anniversary in March next year. And I was able to basically grow my shareholding from there, ultimately leading to, in 2014, me and my then business partner, Malcolm Stewart, leading my out. Yeah. And so we've been co-owners and joint MDs of Tayburn for about 10 years roughly. And then in April this year, I'm delighted to say that Tayburn was acquired by another agency, Lewis, to form Limitless Innovations Group. So we're about 100 odd days into the new merger, which is super exciting.
And tell me about the different chunks of Limitless. So you've got different businesses underneath there, haven't you?
Yeah. So the idea was to really do something that was going to allow everyone to do the thing that they love and therefore love what they do. And our intention is to be at the heart of our clients' businesses. And so we've found, and we've been guilty of it over the years, that typically, and it'd be interesting to get your perspective on this, but typically when, you know, with my Tayburn hat on as a brand agency, I've been speaking to someone who has a marketing challenge of some sort, and I'd be saying, "Well, what you need is a brand strategy, a brand positioning, a brand identity refresh." And actually, the same was true that if someone owned a PR agency, they would say, "Well, what you need is PR," and if you're in an advertising agency, well, what you need is advertising. And so, the idea behind it is to create this unbiased strategic offering, which helps clients to understand or gain clarity really around where their issues may be or opportunities may be. And then within the group, we've got three areas of expertise in branding and brand campaigns with Taburn. Lewis is a technical digital consultancy that's expert in websites and digital applications in Umbraco. And then we have another string to our bow, which is in technical artwork and reprographics for packaging in consumer packaged goods. So, across these four areas, strategy, brand, digital, and packaging, we're able to offer an array of different services.
And one that isn't biased, as you said.
Starting off with a lack of bias, and that's it. And so actually, if the output from that strategic piece isn't brand, digital, or packaging, then we will refer on to trusted partners.
And you kind of skipped over how you got to be co-owner, in a very self-deprecating way, which you always do. But from that 14-year-old boy going, I want to own an ad agency. That didn't just happen, Richard, did it? So what do you think got you to the point that you achieved what you wanted to achieve?
Well, I didn't realize it then, but I looking back on it now, I see exactly how it happened, and it was to have that vision and be clear about what that would look like. And then it was a combination of doing the things that I believed would help me to get into that position. So again, I was being slightly facetious about the sales angle, but there was a tendency certainly in creative firms to be quite taciturn or not overt, certainly when it comes to asking for work and to selling, and a lot of it can be done. Very good firms do a lot through awards and that referral piece from existing clients. But actually, that if you apply a structure and a strategy to how you might ask for referrals and who the right partners may be, and actually do the direct outreach as well. I found that in my ability to do that when other people maybe just preferred to do the work, that helped me to get ahead. That was probably the main thing. And then, yeah, I mean, a combination of circumstances as well. There's always a bit of luck in there with people wanting to retire, and then we made a bit of a strategic direction change to focus primarily around the brand and packaging sides of what we did.
You're so humble. You are, I would say that in my countless years in business, I haven't met many people who can build relationships like you do, and like genuine relationships, not just, oh, hi, can I have your business? See you later type stuff, but honest relationships that we both get, people get something out of. If somebody said to me, describe Richard Simpson, I would really focus on that because that's what I think you are amazing at, along with many other things, but you are a
Thank
super
you.
relationship builder.
Well, thank you. Now, I mean, that means a heck of a lot coming from you. I've always admired everything that you've done, and it's been, I've loved us working together over the years as well. And it's been very much, I think we've done great work together too.
Might have done some other work as well.
Yeah, okay. We'll talk, not talk about that.
Yeah, there was that one that wasn't great, was it? Anyway, no fault of ours. We were obviously brilliant and geniuses. So now, in your role now, tell me what you actually do on a day-to-day basis.
So I mean, it's really interesting you pick up on the relationship bit, and I mean that's the bit that I love. And again, it's something where I didn't appreciate it was really a skill or a sort of a superpower, to use common parlance. But with the benefit of some wise words from various people, I was able to sort of really focus in on that. So the way I look at my week, I mean, I suppose there's two elements to it. There's Richard Koch's 80-20 principle, which is based on Pareto, where 80% of your outcomes come from 20% of your endeavors. And I realize that the more people I meet and get the opportunity to build relationships, either in a one-to-one or by attending an event or speaking at an event, then, you know, I can affect the most positive outcomes for the business. So that's the bulk of what I tend to do during the week. Sort of David, my new business partner, takes the mickey out of me, saying what's basically coffee, lunch, dinner, and attending the opening of a bag of crisps. And he's not a million miles away. It's maybe a bit of golf thrown in there. But yeah, so a big part of that, and again, it's understanding, you know, where people's pain points are, where their opportunities are, and then introducing them to the team of experts that we have. And also, it's not, you know, it's never my job to coerce or persuade someone into doing something they don't want to do. It's purely about facilitation. And if I can't help them, then the chances are I know someone brilliant like you whom I can introduce them to. So
thanks a bow. Thank you. How big is Limitless Innovations now? How many people have you got in the team?
So we've got about 30 odd people in the team. I'm still finding my way to the toilets in the new office, to be honest with you. So I'm trying to figure out. And we're roughly 30 people. Yeah.
And how have you found the transition from kind of MD of Tabor into co-owner of a far bigger group?
Yeah, so I mean, it's been, there's two sides to it. There's the sort of the emotional side of it, then there's the practicality of it. So the emotional bit was really interesting because I don't feel, I've always considered myself to be a bit of a fraud as an entrepreneur, because I never founded Tabern, and I've since realized that actually, well, no, I am absolutely an entrepreneur, and I'm quite happy to own that, because, you know, I still have taken the same level of risk and share that risk and reward. But I think it's, I think I was very aware of the legacy of the business. And so I wanted to make sure that the decision to merge with another agency was right for all the people that had gone before, all the people who are in the business now, most importantly, and all the people who may come into the business in the future. And ultimately, you know, this was about offering our clients more, a greater breadth of service, but then also offering our team an opportunity to grow and develop their careers. So that was playing heavily in my mind, you know, God, is this right? Is this right? And then there was another part of it, which was just about the practicalities, which was, you know, I along with Malcolm, we've been very focused on, you know, income and forecasting and pipeline and cash and cost base, and then, you know, HR and age receivables and all these sort of things. And now we've got a team that is expert in that and loves to do that. So, you know, it's not that it's not my problem and I'm not interested in it, but it's not what I'm supposed to do. So, you know, if something was coming up to me, I would say, well, there's a tendency to want to sort of jump in and help, but actually it was like, well, no, you need to speak to them now. And I find that quite tricky, to be honest.
Yeah. It's not behavior you're used to, I suppose.
Yeah. Because we've been really used to working in a particular way over the 9 years.
Yeah. One of the things that we talk about a lot when we're having a monthly cup of tea is self-development, learning, your continuous pursuit of knowledge, to kind of not better your life. What's a better way of putting that? Enhance, I suppose. Can we talk about some of the lessons that you've learned along the way as a leader? Yeah, can absolutely. We start with, what do you think your best lesson is that you've learned?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's almost entirely, yeah, it, no, it's entirely related to, I guess, self-belief and understanding the pure potential that resides within us.
Yeah.
And some have a greater awareness of that than others. And that's generally due to conditioning within society from well-intended parents and peers and teachers and so forth and friends.
Yeah.
to actually people who maybe, you know, have an ulterior motive and want to further themselves ahead of the competition. And sometimes that can place limitations upon us. And I think, I mean, the biggest thing for me was sort of realization that you know, we're not our thoughts and we're not our feelings. And actually that if we over engage with thoughts and feelings, we can affect the experience that we have. So there's this thing in Viktor Frankl, Man's Search for Meaning, about a stimulus and a response, and in the middle is a choice. So if a circumstance occurs, we're the ones that add all the meaning to it, and subsequently we get to have that experience. And so for me, I think it's very much about realizing that if you'd really love to do something for the joy and the fulfillment of it, then you can absolutely do it.
Yeah.
And it took me a long time to sort of realize that.
I love that frame. It's interesting because after one of our conversations, I started thinking about what I choose to do. And I actively use that in my conversations now. I choose to do this rather than I have to, I should. I'm feeling, you know, pressure to behave in a certain way. But by owning that choice,
yeah,
it's quite freeing in a way because I choose to or I don't choose to.
That's it. It's that freedom.
Yeah,
it's off the back of that because it's intentional.
Yeah,
it's based on a desire that you have, rather than awareness of a lack or a concern or, you know, and that's the thing, I suppose, that sort of lack or, you know, fear. There's lots of different words for it, from, you know, the extremes of anxiety to actual sort of mild concern. But it's all the same thing, just pronounced in a different way. It's fear, and you go, well, you know, God, I need to be doing this, I need to be doing that, and that's coming very often from the ego. And so being able to kind of bypass that and going to, well, no, this is what I'd really love to experience, and actually I have that potential within me to do that.
And how do you apply that as a leader within your business?
It's a great question. I mean, I think it starts with encouraging the team to focus on what it is that they love to do. And so, you know, we talk about having a team of experts that get to use their expertise to help our clients, which is ultimately what we get out of bed for in the morning.
Yeah.
And so encouraging them to follow that fulfillment through training and skills development, and that, you know, there's the hard knowledge, the acquisition of actual facts and information, or there's maybe something that's a bit softer, which is maybe some coaching or, you know, an experience that's going to allow you to get into that place where you can be more intentional. So I think there's that.
Do you come across any cynicism?
Yeah. I mean, it comes back to that first point about society, and I think, you know, there's a tendency to experience life through three lenses. There's to me, which is the sort of the victim mentality, where, you know, you're blaming, you know, not taking responsibility, persecuting, putting someone down to build yourself up, and then the rescuer, which is a sort of passive aggressive way of persecution. You know, you can't do that, I'll do this,
because yeah, you're not
that. So you tend to sort of see that in that kind of to me dynamic. But then if you move up a level, you get this whole fallacy of massive action. And that's where a lot of the success, I mean, if you look at all the self-development stuff, all that perceived success comes from, well, I worked hard, I demonstrated grit, I smashed through it, I triumphed in the face of adversity. And absolutely, and I'm not trying to belittle or undermine any of that, because a lot of that has led to, you know, outlandish success. But there's another way, in my belief, which is allowing things to happen through you. And that's where I think true contentment can lie. And there's not many people I can have that conversation with, because so many people are caught up in that it's either to me or by me.
Yeah.
And so you don't pay any attention to the through me dynamic, because it's not what we're led to believe over here through our civic institutions, whether that's business or faith or society in their own.
Yeah. So you use this belief system with the people who work in your business to empower them, to encourage them.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what do you do? What do you do if somebody just looks at you and goes, what? What do you talk about?
I think some people do.
Well, I think they would, because of everything you've just said.
Yeah.
The social and societal norms
do not
talk about letting things happen through you.
Yeah.
They are like, I got up at 5 a.m. and had a nice bath and ran 72 miles before I did my 300 million emails and blah. You know, it's all a bit, it is, isn't it? It is.
Okay.
So how do you deal with that when somebody just goes, I've got no idea what you're talking about, mate?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's not for me to force my beliefs on them, because then that's when you start to get into the realm of evangelism.
Yes.
And that's not what I'm about at all. I mean, it's not for me to decide what people think and feel. I mean, if people want to embrace that sort of outlook, brilliant, but they might do so with a dose of cynicism, but that's fine. In that case, then all I ask of them is that they do their job to the best of their ability, and that they find their happiness. And if that happiness isn't within Limitless, then, you know, we will encourage them to find that elsewhere. But we've got much hope that they would like to be part of the journey. And there's varying degrees. I mean, some are sort of all in, and yeah, absolutely, this is very much a philosophy I'd like to live my life by. Others are a bit more, okay, not sure, I'll just do my job.
Could you imagine, right? So you're transported from Limitless Innovations Group, and you now work for an investment bank. And you walk in and you say to your
team, one of them.
You say to your team, find your happiness.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking about culture and setting and sectors, and you know, you are in a particularly open sector. People tend to be more accepting, more exploratory in terms of their ways of thinking. What would you do? I mean, I can't actually imagine you in banking, but let's just go with it for the sake of this. But could you, like, those organizations that could benefit from a simple ethos of find your happiness, how could they benefit from that? What could they do about that? I'm just thinking of people listening who aren't necessarily in a creative industry, who might be going, find your happiness.
So do you mean me working in that environment, or do you mean me advising that?
Yes, what would your advice be to somebody in a less open sector or environment to help release the power of what you've talked about in terms of self-belief and find your happiness?
But I think that's all, it all has to come from within themselves. So again, it comes back to that. So the minute that they start to articulate that sentiment or belief system, then they may, based on assumptions that we have on that sector, they may find that difficult because of the behaviors that we tend to associate with it. Whereas they could quite easily apply it themselves. But, you know, it just comes back to what I said before. It's you know, these frameworks of, you know, something happens, they will respond, but then they can choose that response, and that's up to them.
Yeah.
And then the second element of it is sort of, you know, the chances are that they've succeeded there through taking massive action. So again, that massive action can come at a cost. It can come at a mental or a physical or a, you know, dare I say, a spiritual cost. And so showing that there's another way for them to think about life is I mean, I you know, it's something I love to talk about when invited, but it's something that, again, I don't want to evangelize about because it's not everyone's cup of tea.
Yeah, I get that. Okay, tell me about.
I don't know if I've answered your question there, but.
Well, no, you have, because what you're saying is, as a leader, you want people to find their own happiness.
Yes, and that's it. And it's such a subjective thing that I can't tell you what your happiness is.
Yeah.
Only you can know that, but I can help you.
Sure, I do.
But I can help you to identify what that might be through these frameworks and beliefs and.
Yeah,
no,
I get it. And I think is, if you sit down with people who you work with, who work for you, you work with, and you help them understand their sources of happiness, their sources of motivation, then as somebody running a business, I think that's a huge talent and a huge, not a privilege, but it's very enabling, like we said, it's very freeing for people. And then I think I can see that by going through that process should result in happier teams, happier people. Yeah.
In theory, yeah. I mean, in practice, you know, we experience challenges like anyone else. So I mean, it isn't all utopia, but actually, you know, I think, again, coming back to that point, we can control
choose
how we respond to it.
It's interesting. Tell me about the hardest lesson you've ever learned.
Excuse me. Yeah, so I mean, I think it's around decision making and indecision.
Right.
So I have a belief that, you know, if you want to decide to do so, it's quite interesting. The etymology of it is a decadre, which is off cut. So to decide, you cut off an option.
Yes.
And you go in, and I think my belief, successful people, and depends how you define success, but those who are healthy, wealthy, and wise. They take the time, they consider the options, the implications, and then they make a decision, they stick with it.
Yeah.
And I know that in the past, we've either you know, taken too long and procrastinated on a decision, or we've made a decision, but then we've changed course.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so I think it comes down to really just, you know, it sort of ties into the first point, you know, when you have that belief and that understanding of the pure potential.
Yeah.
You're empowered to be decisive and to stick with it.
Yeah. And was there something that happened that helped you learn that lesson?
There's been a lot of things, and it usually relates to people and you know, just decisions to move people on or to help them find somewhere else for them to be happy or you know, to make a decision that they're not going to be right. And in both scenarios, one was quite delicate because it was very compassionate, but it really hurt the business. And then there was another one which was very, we afforded too much belief in the expertise of the individual,
right,
and over the consequences of, you know, their whole style.
Yeah.
So I think just making decisions, and I'm not talking about, you know, like brutally firing people or anything like that. That's not what we do. But sometimes it's a fair not nice conversation. It's unfair not to have it, but it's not something you particularly want to have to do.
What's the expression about make a decision and make it the right one?
Yes.
Whatever. Even if it's not the right decision, make it the right one. Once you've made it.
And that, and again, we have that power within us to make it right.
And that's about how you frame things, isn't it, to yourself?
Yeah, totally. Yes. Yes.
And you have the power to do that yourself.
Totally. Yes. Yeah. And I mean, we've done it strategically with the business as well, making decisions to exit particular channels or disciplines.
Yes.
Some were right, some were wrong. The wrong ones actually were made right by turning the focus elsewhere. So, yeah.
Exactly that. I mean, I was about to say, so how do you rectify those mistakes? But actually, what you're saying is you turn those mistakes into success by the way that you frame it and the way that you react to what's happened.
Yeah, I mean, I look back on, I mean, this is a thing from the pandemic. I mean, as you know, we built a good reputation in brand.
Yeah.
And we had started to do more digital work and actually migrated into effectively the bulk of our net new business certainly was coming from design and build of fairly large websites. But the technology that we were using, we felt was a bit niche, actually. It didn't have the community in some ways. Again, it's back to that bias. You know, it was the decision to use that technology suited us and not necessarily the client.
Yeah.
I mean, it did. It was a good system, and it worked. But was it the best thing for them? And so we made a decision that actually, the build phase was challenging to make profitable, but what it did do was created monthly recurring revenue,
right,
which helped us to build a business and helped us to build enterprise value. But we decided during the pandemic that as a result of, you know, losing money and actually not being core to what Malcolm and our expertise is in brand, we decided to come out of that. And that felt right, but actually we then started to lose some of that that recurring revenue, which became quite tough. And when, you know, brand projects are typically project driven, so it can be lumpy. So it's fortunately a packaging business that's always given us a very steady income base. But it's funny how what felt like a really good strategic decision actually was challenging. But then, you know, we might not have been able to get this merger over the line because Lewis had very much an expert digital agency. So that conflict might have proved a bit of a challenge.
You never know what might not have happened, do you?
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. So you can only control what you have in front of you at the time.
Yeah. And actually, I remember at the time, it seemed quite logical.
Yeah. 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 Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Because, I mean, if a build project overran and I'd get hauled in and we'd be trying to explain to the CEO why her or his website was months late, and I'm relying very heavily on the team to tell me, and then I'm reporting back to our board and our chairman's going, Richard, would you like to explain to me why this, you know, and then all sides.
No, I wouldn't.
Yes,
I don't want to explain it because I don't know.
Ask the questions.
Yeah. There were some tough times. So throughout your career, what do you think would be this, like, the single piece of advice that you would give to other people?
It's about vision. It's about having a clear view of what you would love to experience. And I think I keep using the word love, and I don't mean that from a romantic sense. I mean that from joy and fulfillment. What would bring you joy and fulfillment? What would you love to do?
That 14-year-old boy.
Yeah. Yeah. I quite like the sound of advertising. Do you want to know the reason for it? I'm going to potentially undermine everything I've just been talking about here, but it was because my mum's
really
cousin.
Shallow.
It is. Yeah.
Yeah.
My mum's cousin showed up at our house in a Jag, and he'd just been at Richard Branson's birthday party. And I was like, that sounds amazing. What do you do?
Right,
I
I'm
want
going to do that.
to.
That is so not you. You are so not motivated by that kind of stuff. But
Not anymore.
maybe your 14-year-old self was.
Yeah, I quite like the sort of it looked I think it looks interesting. I mean, I think that was the thing. I you know, the prospect of being a lawyer, you know, or a teacher
Yeah.
or doctor, you know, or an investment banker. You know,
Yeah.
it's not me.
Yeah,
And
I don't
actually
know.
that and because I, you know, again, potential limitations of school and society at that time. You know, you're either going to go into that sort of white collar environment, or you're going to learn a trade.
Yeah.
And actually, there's so many other things that you can do. And I think actually, to be fair to Gordon, he actually showed me what was possible. You know, and I thought, it's quite nice.
And have you got a Jag? You
No,
haven't had a Jag.
I drive a Volvo.
You drive a bike. That's what you drive.
Yeah.
Probably don't even use your car. So, what next for Richard? What next for Mr. Simpson?
Well, next, no, it's a great question. I mean, David and I are very committed to our vision for Limitless, which is to be at the heart of every great business and to enjoy the journey. Because I think there's been, without speaking for him as well, I know that he's experienced some of the challenges as well. And I think, you know, we're very aligned in terms of our outlook. And so, you know, it's been a lot of fun. I mean, some challenges in terms of integrating the two businesses, but we're starting to get some real traction and momentum now. So, really enjoy that. I have a real interest in people. So, you know, the opportunity to work with people to help them achieve their goals is very appealing, whether that's either directly or with companies. So starting to get a few opportunities around that.
I think the alignment of helping individuals achieve their goals whilst achieving the goals for the business, I think it's kind of its moment, Richard. If you think about post-pandemic, if you think about changes in people's attitudes, what they want, what they're prepared to put up with, what they're not prepared to put up with, what they're prepared to see as a sacrifice, I think you're ahead of the curve, mate. I think if you can share this approach more widely, I imagine that a lot of people would be a lot happier.
I mean, it suddenly made me a lot happier. And I mean, you know, there was a spell a few years ago where literally I was questioning everything. You know, do I still want to be doing this? You know, is this, Christ, is this what it's all about? And I think there's the that mindset piece of it as well. But there's also stuff that you can do physically to give yourself the tools to feel better. And it's not just thrashing yourself in a CrossFit gym, you know, but it's about that word intention again. You know, setting clear intentions around the food that you eat and you know, while still having a drink and having a good time as well, because you know, we're generally social
Only
animals. Yeah, exactly. And we're here for a human experience.
human.
So, you know, you want to have that fun as well. But then, you know, there are times where maybe that third steak pie isn't a good idea. So,
Have you ever
absolutely.
had two steak pies?
Oh, I've had three. That was a triple CrossFit session. Actually, it was two and a sausage roll. Sorry. From
Two
Baines the
steak
Baker.
pies and a sausage roll.
Two steak pies and a sausage roll. Baines the Baker, best bakery.
We're going from deep, meaningful models about how to get fulfillment to a frayed bentos and a sausage roll of an evening. Well, it's been an absolute pleasure. I love working with you. I love seeing what you're doing. I hope that you are as valued across your business as I think of you, and that doesn't make sense. I hope that you continue to be as valued as I know you are. And thank you very much for being on. It's been a pleasure.
so much, Sarah. Thank you so much. And it's been a real pleasure as well. Thank you.